Well, good morning, everybody. I'm glad you stopped by because we're going to need to follow the great leadership that Steve has really started with others to make these guidelines real or make them even stronger in the future. And today, I just want to do a very brief overview of one possibility that we could pursue, because of the political environment that we face at the state level is quite frankly horrendous from our viewpoint at the American Federation of Teachers. The midterm elections found 40 new Republican governors who are consistently anti-regulatory in their approach to state government and resistant to any kind of new laws and environment. And on top of that, we're faced with a U.S. school system that is highly balkanized, very much locally operated politically, and highly resistant even to the dictates of their states. So that exists, that sort of cumbersome state existed before we had the Republican sweep in 2010. And to add on to our misery is that we're facing a historic fiscal crisis in just about every state except maybe North Dakota, where states are seeing slips in revenue and are making horrific cuts. So they're not going to be very hospitable in the best of circumstances to new and improved school siting legislation. So we're challenged right now. Granted, this may not always be the case, and then we can pursue some of the things that those of us who are advocates have always pursued, trying to get better, more protective legislation. But in the interim, I just wanted to talk about how we can use the movement for green schools as a way of getting better siting guidelines. And this is something I want to talk to with everyone. We basically, in the realm of green schools, have two private, not-for-profit organizations that have created rating systems for building green schools. Schools are sustainable. I mean, how many of you all are environmentalists, I assume, or school people, have heard of the U.S. Green Building Council? Okay. It established in 1993, very much a sort of market-driven approach to building commercial buildings in sustainable ways. Had decided, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago to get into also rating school buildings, and created a program, a rating program called LEED for Schools. That's Leadership in Environmental and Energy Design. And I forget which E comes before which, but LEED. People heard of LEED? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's one big player, and in fact, is becoming the predominant player probably in this sort of rating, market-driven process. In fact, U.S. Green Building Council is very actively and aggressively pursuing getting its brand into school construction through legislation at states. And I think they have maybe 13 or 14 states now. No, not that many.
CHIPS has 15.
Well, CHIPS, those are guidelines. So, yes. Yep. The other major player, it's a collaborative for high-performance schools, CHIPS, that was established actually by the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, and back in the late 90s, when they were very concerned about energy use and promoting energy efficiency, they brought in some other really key stakeholders, like the school district in LA, LAUSD, some public health folks. And they came up with a rating system, and in many ways, either complements or exceeds what the U.S. Green Building Council has come up. Chips has expanded beyond California to other states such as Texas, Virginia, Hawaii, Colorado, Texas, surprisingly. But I just want to run through very, very briefly what some of the requirements are in order to be certified by either of these parties. And the U.S. Green Building Council, in its LEED for School certification, requires some kind of environmental site assessment as a prerequisite. In other words, you cannot get the LEED for School certificate unless this has been done. And that requires things that are called phase one assessments under the ASTM. That's another consensus organization that puts out standards that are totally voluntary. And if the phase one assessment brings up concerns, like looking at things that Steve and Kathy talked about, like the history of the site, previous use, things that go in the surrounding, then that triggers what is called a phase two assessment, where you actually do more investigation and also testing, if appropriate, to determine what the potential environmental contaminants are on site or off site. So that is really, you know, at least the start of really sort of making more rational siting decisions. Here are some of the tools that are recommended in the ASTM phase one assessment, going around, looking at records, public records, interviewing owners, past owners, people in the community, to see how the site was used. You know, some sites that can appear very pristine have had dumping going on for years, you know, illegal dumping. So you can't always tell. You really do have to look carefully. The U.S. GBC also prohibits any buildings on a land on a previous landfill. So the school in Providence, Rhode Island, if they had sought LEED certification, they would have been categorically denied. Then, if a site is chosen and can be cleaned up if contaminants are found, LEED requires documentation that the site has been cleaned up at least to current federal, state, and local standards. And, 2 minutes, okay. Okay, so let's just go on to CHIPS, which is far more prescriptive in their requirements. They require, the kinds of things that the CHIPAC report recommended, looking at radiuses of around the school. They look for written findings about pipelines and other contaminants, and that there is some documentation that if remediation is done, that it's done clearly to the most rigorous standards above. Okay, so what are some of the drawbacks of, you know, taking this approach? First of all, it is voluntary. We don't have legislation in all the states that are pursuing, you know, green schools. However, it would be worthwhile, for instance, in discussing with, you know, in the discussion period, whether we should be getting public health people involved in the U.S. Green Building Council LEED for Schools process, LEED for existing building process, because we have a lot of leased buildings that are nightmares in New York City, for instance, and maybe sort of encouraging new stakeholders for that process. That's what I want to see, because CHIPS, where fundamentally is really good, their guidelines are good, but for instance in Texas, we just got shut down by the State School Board Association when a coalition tried to get siting laws passed there. So, and they've got CHIPS, is a voluntary process, so politically we might be able to move constituencies to demand of their school districts, for instance, that they adopt CHIPS, and we get more movement on school siding. You know, quite frankly, you know, I don't know, a building's got a 20 to 50 year lifespan, and it is very tragic to put these schools up on degraded property or, you know, downwind from an industrial park, and that's what we're seeing more and more of. So anyway, thank you very much, and look forward to hearing your perspective on this.
Thank you very much.